Today's daf, Daf Lamed Tes. Richie is here, so we're able to start. We're holding on Daf Lamed Tes on the date. And we were... let's see what we got up to. Yes, we were cooking some stews, actually, yesterday. All right, and... Okay, I mean, basically the last thing that we learned was the machloket within a machloket about how to understand, first of all, what it was that Rabbi Yochanan had said. There was some question to different approaches to Rabbi Yochanan. Furthermore, we had a machloket between the original Rav Chisda, who quoted the two approaches, whether you make a shahakol or you make a bird for your adama, a stew. Rav Chisda claimed that it's not really a machloket, because in his opinion it really depends. If it's something that's generally eats stew, then you would make a bracha on the stew, which is its main bracha, which is the Hadam or the Eitz, whatever the case may be. And if it's not the normal way to eat it, then it would be a shakol, and that each quote was basically referring to something else. There was no machloket at all. Then we had another quote by Rav Nachman, of the same discussion, basically, in which he felt that actually there was a big machloket over here about how to view the shlakot, and he considered it to be part of the din of Raki Kashalui, which got us into matzah, about the Yossi Pesach, and so on. But in other words, a machloket about whether it is a machloket, first of all, and whether it is dependent on the similarity of the din to the din of lechem. And we'll see, obviously, more of this. This gets more interesting as we go, but we'll review it today in our brief halakha review. And we got up to the Masiv Rav Yitzchak Bar Shmuel, which is four lines up from the bottom on Amud Beis. Yirakot she'adam yotze behem yidecho v'ato b'pesach. Now, we're still holding at the Seder over here. And the question is, we're at the Morah. We were handling the matzah. We got through that more or less cheaply. And now we're at the Morer, and the question is, which part, let's say, of a lettuce do you have to eat? Actually, it could be either part. You could eat the leaf, you could eat the stem, the kelach shelahim, but you cannot eat the, I always get a giggle out of this piece, because I tell you, every time I read this, it reminds me of Yom Kippur, you know? Kibushim shalukim. That's killed Paul Israel for me. You can't be yotze if you've got salted lettuce or horseradish, or stewed or boiled. Now, according to you, according to the Shitot over here, that you consider to say a bore priha dama on a cooked lettuce, so then, Shlukin amaylo? What would be wrong with having stewed horseradish or stewed lettuce? Now, again,
I would say adom.
Yeah, if you would say adom. In other words, assuming that it really is a machloket, like the Nachman is learning, clearly understanding that according to Nachman, we really don't care whether it was nishtani legriuta even. In other words, because we're all going to be agreed that stewed lettuce is certainly not as tasty as lettuce is, so it's definitely nishtana legriuta. It seems nonetheless that we're saying over here, it doesn't matter. In other words, once something has its din of a bracha, you don't, unless you literally take away its tzuras achila, that the bracha continues to be set on it, no matter what particular state it's in. Very similar to the bread, where if you originally bake it in a tzura that it's not bready, it's a cracker. So you don't make a motzilecha menaretz. But if you had a large loaf, and now you rubbed it down, and now it's pieces, you make on the tiny piece of the matzimel, you make a motzi. Same thing over here. Processing something, once it gets its din of a bracha, according to this sheet, in other words, the way of Nachman's understanding it, it's not a function of the norm of how one eats it. It's simply a question of what established that bracha, and as long as it's still roy to be eaten, a bracha doesn't change. That would be the shita over here. In which case, why can I not be yotze my maror at the Seder with boiled horseradish, which would be great because people have a hard time eating horseradish, so the Lamaisi have the same thing. And of course, we basically have the same teretz that we had yesterday. Actually, I shouldn't say it's the same, because many shitot hold that the tam matzah that we spoke about yesterday isn't really, because we need tam matzah specifically. Truth is, you can swallow matzah and without chewing it, you'd still be yotze, which you can't do for morah. So clearly, tam matzah and tam morah are not the same. And that causes some of the shitot to say that yesterday's tam matzah was really a general dinin pot that we were applying to the matzah over here. But when it comes to tam morah, that's for sure. You can't swallow your horseradish in a pill form, you've got to taste the maror. Since over here it no longer has the maror taste, so shiny hatam to be ina ta'am maror v'leka. But as far as the bracha is concerned, what difference would it possibly make ta'am maror to the bracha? Only Rabbi Yemiel or Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Yochanan, hechim yivarech al zayit malia. You said the whole thing started with the story that you yourself saw Rabbi Yochanan eat a salted olive, and nonetheless he made it Baruch Hu Eitz and so on. I mean, I accept that. I just have another problem. How did he make a broth on a salted olive when it's obviously not a kezias? Yeah, there you go. Zayat's not a kezias, is it? I mean, we all know that. A kezias is 45 times the size of an olive. anybody who tried eating a kezias on Pesach knows. No, but seriously, the kezias includes the pit. It's only a reference. You can't eat an actual zayat and still eat a kezias unless you swallow the pit, but then the pit's not roi lachila. So the bottom line is, kiven the shekila legarine, when you subtract the garin of the zayit, but shiuri, now you have less than a kezayit. So you should not have made at least the brocha aharona, as Tosis points out. I mean, we have a problem over here about the brocha rishona, because the brocha rishona you eat lechor even pachot mikishiur. But how did he make the brocha aharona? Now Tosis brings over here a fascinating Yerushalmi, which we'll be getting to in brachot, which says, has the same story, has the same question, and answers, an amazing answer, which I bet you never thought of, birya shiny. Just like lagabe dinim of bitol and so on, we view an actual organism, the entire organism, as having a unique hashibut. So the Yerushalmi is true lagabe bracha as well. If this is the organism, so what's the difference what size it is? You don't need a kezayit of a zayit. The zayit is enough to eat. And therefore, there's no problem. Someone is saying it's dafka by the shivat hamilim. Because since the Torah mentions specifically these things, it treats them not as general foodstuffs, but rather as each one a unique described species. If I have that species, the Torah is makshivit for me to make a broth on. By the way, there's meanwhile brings another interesting question, is whether the Gemara's question would have been asked even for a borei nefashot. Is there a shiur on borei nefashot? Or is borei nefashot just like, you know, on the hana'ah? And he brings over here the sheet of the Ri, that since it's not a bracha chashuvah anyway, we said we sort of throw it in for having a na'ah. We said velo klum, we call it. Maybe it doesn't have a shear. Not in the Maisa, as we know, of course, we don't pass them like that. But, because as Tosus himself disagrees here with the Ri, the borei nefashot was clearly a takana which applies the din of bracha achrona, the true bracha achrona, to things which don't have their own bracha. Therefore, we weren't going to be metaken something that differed in its essence from the general halach of a bracha achrona. If you only make a me'in shalosh with a kezayit, then you're only going to make a birkat shakol with a shir, either a kezayit or a vid, as the case may be. In any event,
the assumption of zayis malach is they only ate one olive?
Yeah. That's what he said. I saw him eat a zayit maliach. That was his eidut. That was the point.
And it's
all aspect. Well, if you try one of those zayit maliach, you eat one and you never eat another one. But, you know, that's the sheet that I think was in Kriyuta.
What don't we mean? A zayit maliach is like a kind of
real zayit maliach. That's American zayit maliach. In America, nothing has any taste. I'm serious. It's engineered to take all taste out because Americans don't believe in the physical world, really. They think they do, but they're frightened by it. But in the real Zayat Maliach is difficult. I mean, it's extremely, extremely salty. Has an extremely pungent taste, which is why, according to many over here, Zayat Maliach was a yuri, that was the griuta. And that was the finish. The griuta was still making a... there's the whole Reb Kivegra on this point. But The idea over here is that Lamaisa, I had a, listen, I got to tell you, I got a story. My wife for 40 years hasn't forgiven me. She sent me out to bring a couple of onions, and I brought back a couple of onions, like any man would bring back, right? Two onions. If your wife told you, get me a couple of onions, say when you first got married, what would, now you know, and a woman says a couple, but it has nothing to do with what the word a couple means, and so on and so forth. But would you not have brought two onions?
Little, maybe three.
Seriously, you would have brought three if she said a couple?
A couple, it could be two, three.
Yeah, boy. No, but
what is it?
Two kilo, but if she said a couple?
Whatever she said, 2 kilo.
That's because you got smart. That's
you next week.
I That's a shear.
So know what happens.
That's very good. Very well defined. In any event, I'm still paying for it. Let me tell you, I'm still paying for it. But over here in the Gemara, when we make a dia, because you say Rabbi Yochanan ate an olive, we mean Rabbi Yochanan ate an olive.
But the din of beer still applies even if they're even
though
they're not eating the pit.
What?
The Yerushalmi, that was
probably. Yeah.
Even though you're eating the pit, it's still counts the whole thing. Yeah.
The birya is the food part edible of the edible part of the olive. Anyway, so we got a cute question over here. A keziah is by definition not the sheer. A ziah is by definition not a keziah. Omar le mi sabek keziah gadol, but you know what are you thinking? That you need to have the largest size ziah. A ziah is a standard ziah, the ziah beinoni, and Rabbi Yochanan ate a larger ziah, so even with the garim, he still had a sheer of a keziah, and that was the case over here, which we had. That was a large olive in which apagav sheklula garinit. Even though the pit had been removed, pashle shiura, there was still enough of a shiur left. The tznan zayit she'amru lo katan v'lo gadol ela beinuni, and the one that we use as the dugma is the zehu aguri. That's called the aguri, and as Rabbi Avu points out, its species name isn't really technically aguri. The real name of the species is avruti. The reason, or some say it's the samrusi olive, but lama nikra shmo aguri sheshamno agur betocho. Rashi learns all over agur betocho means that the way in which this olive contains the oil is not similar to the let's say tapuach, in which you don't see the liquid, and only in pressing you get liquid out. There's an element of crushing involved. The zayat aguri is more like a grape in which the thin membranes surround the oil, but the oil is ogur in it. Others learn ogur batofa has to do with the shear particularly. And they understand that other olives, when they're exposed to the rain or to heat, they lose a certain amount of their oil, and it affects the size of the olive. So the zayat aguri is protected in such a way that it is a good use of a standard olive because it maintains that size no matter what. Mema ketanoi. Now, is it possible that this issue of brocha and the shlakot and so on, could this be a machlokas tanoim? It's interesting, the Tanoim that we're about to quote, that it's a machlokas between, have no names. They are two students, it's fascinating, there were two students that were by Bar Kappura. So how do Trey Tabirin?
What was the problem with this thing? I mean, if it was less than a shear, of course, he wouldn't say that.
It says he did. Uberich, the fun of Akra, that was the whole deal. The Hanu Trei Talmudei Levi Yadvik Amei de Bar Kappura. Heviu Lefanav. Okay, so they serve, they're sitting in Bar Kappura, they bring out on the table three dishes. Kruv, and Dormaskin, and Pargyot. That Kruv, we know what it is. Pargyot, we know what it is. Pargyot is a little chicken or some type of fowl. You know, but you have a toothpick in. These are things that are not being eaten in La Feta Tapat. They come as appetizers before the meal. And the durmaskin, what exactly durmaskin is, Rashi brings a lashon out of it. He's told maybe it's prunes. Ani Shamati, the Tosfos disagrees. He says it doesn't make any sense because it says that they said a Bori Pri Adoma, if it was prunes, Lechora, even though they're dried and so on and so forth, but they're not Bori Pri Adoma. They wouldn't change the bracha, although you should know there are some shittas we hold. Now, where you have an Ha'etz that was Nishtana Legriyuta, it becomes a Bori Pri Adoma. But he doesn't even entertain that possibility. And he says that it must be also a type of kruv, maybe Brussels sprouts or something like that, which, you know, it's brought to the table.
Damascus prunes is what the French Steinfeld is called.
Damascus prunes.
It can't be Brussels sprouts. It's the derice to eat Brussels sprouts. I can entertain such a
job. That's true. Obviously, in those days, the Shratzim had not discovered vegetables yet. Because it's clear that they ate them, and therefore
they had not yet developed a very hardy capacity to infest anything.
Close your nose and eat.
It's amazing.
So what happened? Bar Kappara gives rishus to one of them to make a bracha. Now this is very dangerous. It could cost you. It could end up costing you your life, as you'll see. It gets worse. So kofatu birech ala pargio. So what do? He grabs a little piece of his chicken dip and he takes one on a toothpick and he makes a bracha. Now the shaila is over here. What do you mean he was making the bracha for whom? We were talking about a bracha rishona. Tosis points out that the case over here must be that they were eating the haseva, and that's called the kviyuta v'suda, which we no longer have, but it was Roman custom, and that type of kviyuta they would be mevorek one for others. So there was one, just like we do in a sort of like on Shabbos. Because when you're Mesiv, he made the bracha for everybody. That's the pshat that he gave him to be Mubarak. So that means that he included Bar Kappara in that bracha, and his choice was sort of forced upon them. What bracha are you going to make? He made a shahakal. Ligleda lab chaveiro. So his friend starts making a nasty little giggle about him. Ka'az Bar Kappara. Bar Kappara was angry. And he said, "Lalam avarech anikoyes. I'm not mad at the guy who said the bracha. Alam alag leg anikoyes. Just because chavracha domek mishlo tam tam boser mi olam, just because he looks like a slob who never had a piece of meat in his life, so all he could think about is getting in a piece of bird into his mouth. Where obviously it's a more specific bracha to say a borei pri adama, assuming that that's what was the question over here, because the shahakol is a general bracha." And the more specific a bracha is, as we saw, the more value it has, because the more defined it is. And the central element of bracha is human definition. So, okay, the thing is that apparently the chaviv, since there was chaviv on him, that comes first. So I accept that. But you think you're so smart. What are you laughing about, huh? So atah mali galaktala. What do you have to laugh about? It's your business. Whether he happens to enjoy chicken. Then he said, "You know what? I'm not even upset about the guy who laughed. It's the idiot who made the rock I'm angry about. I mean, after all, you may not think I'm too bright as your Rebbe, but I am a little bit older than you. I mean, how about asking me which one should come first? Especially, I mean, you're being mevorek for me. I mean, don't you think it's in place to give me a polite question as to what it is you should do?" Unfortunately, the Brisa says they both didn't live the year out. Shneim lo hotziu shnatan. But in any event, they were obviously arguing about something. And these are two Tanoim that are arguing. Now, what were they arguing in? My lava, come here, forget. These weren't idiots. They're sitting in front of Bar Kappara. He's dealing seriously with the questions over here. Apparently, the Mubarek Sabar, the one who is making the bracha must have thought that the bracha on the kruv that was shaluk, so he had over here a stew on the one hand, chicken on the other hand, he held they were both shakol in the ebed varo. Therefore, he felt, okay, I like chicken better, let me make a bracha on the chicken. Yokach, the chaviv was adif. Whereas the smart aleck was savar, no, a stew is a borei pri adama. Whereas the pargiot, there's only shakol niyebid varo. Therefore, since you have a bracha that is more well-defined, even keneged your chavivut, the peira is odif. So it seems here that we have a basis for an old machloket about whether stews are shahakol, or stews are borei pri adama, that predates the lashonas that we had in Rabbi Yochanan with Rabbi Chista and Rabbi Nachman yesterday. Is that correct? So, well, not necessarily. Not necessarily. It could be that law. The kuliyamish lakotu pargyot shakoni abidvara. I mean, there is a way of understanding it in which both agreed that it may be that a stew is a shahakol. What they're arguing about may be about whether in the case of two brachot that are similar on a day which is supposed to reach 27 degrees and the president comes in holding a cup of tea, the question is whether one makes a brach on such tea or whether one puts it in the freezer. Thank you.
So let him make the bracha for you.
Oh. So one man yomer may hold chaviv is adiv, and one man yomer may the other man yomer held that kruv by definition is adiv than chaviv, because as your mother always told you, Brussels sprouts are nourishing, and cut the other stuff. Oh, yeah. So what are you eating? You're supposed to eat the thing that's more kosher because it's Zion. Uh-oh.
I hate to do this.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do this last time around.
Oh, no.
Yeah, if Bar Kapara is old and Bar Kapara is Rebbe's Talmud, then it would be parallel with the other one's fine.
Rabbi Yochanan is generally an Amor. Rabbi Chista and Nachman, for sure, we're talking about Amor. That's where we have the real machlokas. Rabbi Yochanan, we don't know precisely what it is that he said and so on, which lashon. Correct? So certainly Bar Kapara, who's Varayatana, 100%, is not considered to be part of the transitional door, which Rabbi Yochanan is part of. Mm-hmm. No matter how you read it, even the Talmidim of Bar Kapara over here, it is Tanayim. So as we're talking about a point in Bar Kapara, when he says Zikna in Khan, he doesn't mean Zikna that I'm an old man, he means Zikna I'm older than you are. You could be 5 years older than someone and also say Zikna in Khan, which we find. Omer Rebbe Zera, the Avina be Rav Kahana Omer Lo. You know, when we were by Rav Huna, he used to teach us that Hanegar Galida Delifta, Parminu Prima Rabba Bore Priha Adama, Prima Zuta Shakoni Abidvoro. If somebody was chopping up now turnip, and this is the way he was going to serve it, and then if it's chopped up finely into, you know, what do they call that they serve all the time?
Coleslaw?
Not coleslaw. The other thing, you know, the New York stuff that you get with the deli all the time.
Sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut, that kind of thing, yeah. Right? So it depends how finely you chop up the kraut. In this case, it was, I mean, again, kruv isn't really what we call kruv in the time of the Gemara or lift up or something. But it was their equivalent of sauerkraut. So if it's prima zuta, if you have it chopped up finely, then it becomes a shakoni abidvaro. But then, when we came to Rabbi Yehuda, Chiyatan Levei Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Lan, he told us there's no such thing. Ini vidi borei puri adama. V'haide farminu tvei, the only reason that they're cutting it up is not because it's a griyuta, even though you'll say it loses some of the crunchiness and so on, so that has ruined its taste. But the reason that it's done is ki'echa that antik taimei, trying to get the taste out of it. So they're sacrificing crunch for taste. Okay, I mean, that's a judgment call, you know. You can order your sauerkraut any way you like it. But it certainly is not considered to be a griuta that it's going to lose atkede kach, the shame of the vegetable.
It's a different advantage.
Well, yes, there's a problem as to why he has to say that, but we'll get into this in our review today. Omer Vashik, Avinu be Rav Kahana, Amalan. When I was by Rav Kahana, and I'll tell you, actually, when we were by Rav Kahana, he used to say that it depends on how you make borscht in order to define the bracha on borscht. So if you've got a tafshil de silka, and you don't put in a lot of flour in it, They just put in flour to cream it, basically. It was creamed borscht. If you don't put in a lot of flour, then you make a burkri adama, because it's borscht, because over there the lifta is the... But in the case, if you have a tafshila, where mafshuba, kimchatve, then it's a borei mine mizonot, because it's mostly, you have more of the flour, it becomes a significant ingredient, but then he realized that there was a mistake, because the flour is only acting as a binder. That's what creaming means. It doesn't really mean that you're eating the flour, and therefore, actually, either way, it's a borei briha adama. And hai b'shadi b'kimcha tvei, the only reason you've added more flour is the debuke b'alma. It's just a trick to keep it binded. But that's not called the maila of the chameshet haminim that Rav and Shmuel were talking about before. Om Rav Chista. So Rav Chista says, look, once we're on the topic of borscht, I mean, we ought to make it well known. Nothing's better for your circulation, cholesterol levels, and heart than good old borscht. And the tafshil shel tshravim is yafel alev. It's totally naim. It keeps that retina pumping, you know. The kosher came. Tered, selek, tered?
Do they call spinach?
Selek, they call spinach?
Tered.
Oh, because this is the...
The green spot.
Ah.
That's the...
Oh, I thought... Uh-huh. Maybe, all right. Yeah, could be.
Well, it makes sense.
Could be. So how do they say, how do they call beets?
Isn't it a selek? What do they call green? I don't know. Beets is selek?
Beetly.
So that's the silka, the silka. We moved on to lifta, I said before. Okay.
Now we're in the
all right, yeah, I'm sorry. I thought we were still on our summit. I apologize. All right, so we're back to Popeye then. You know, we started off with selek, moved on to lefet, which is turnip. I mean, it's generally said as turnip. And teret, okay, so then we're talking about spinach, apparently, you're right.
Yeah. He calls it beets there.
The, on the trodim or the silka?
The trodim.
The trodim, which is another word for selek. I don't know whether it could be our modern... generally speaking, the way it's described in the Gemara, I always had the impression that it was beets, but yeah, I had to go. This is all, I mean, certainly it's, in the halacha, it's referred to as borscht. So, this is only but sitting on the stovetop. I mean, you got to have your borscht cooked properly. So it's sitting on the stovetop and very gently bubbling, so it's going tuk, tuk. And then if it's making the right sounds, then it's great for your heart. Amr Papa, Shidali. That's what life is about. That's what life is about. They have anything that has to do with life. They're Bikim Gedalina. But yeah, you think that the modern rabbis who lock themselves up in a room somewhere, and this is, even up until fairly recently, if you went to for a din, when they used to have dinei Torah, real dinei Torah, with the people who, I mean, the bekiyas in things that are financial instruments and all types of complex economic dealings and the psychology behind them, the negotiations and so on, that you used to get from Rabbonim was absolutely astounding. I mean, just Bismanein, I'm saying, not that long ago. Omer Papa, Pshita li maida silka kasilka, umaida lifta lamifta, umaida kula shalka kakula shalka. Okay, it's clear to me that even though we said before, if you're talking about juice, that juice is Zeya Bialma, it's clear to me that if you're going to be drinking borscht, then definitely you should be making a brocha ha'adama on the juice.
Is juice from the cooked
borscht? Yes. And of course, this is very problematic, as Tosis points out. How could the cooked juice be less than the actual product of the squeezing of the fruit itself?
that over there we said it's Zaya, and over here we're saying it's more than Zaya. There's a lot of approaches which we'll have to get to in our review, but I mean, you know, some taina that since it's cooked, so it's able to absorb more, it doesn't seem to make sense when you absorb. I mean, but absorb is never going to be the same as the... No. Some go to an extreme and say this is only where the whole method of eating, specifically to eat it in this fashion, and you're eating also the thing in the borscht. As a matter of fact, the pieces of the others learn it's talking about the type of like soup greens, which the only way you'll eat it is this way. Otherwise, you would never eat these kind of things. We'll see in the next piece, which talks about anise, this doesn't hold up completely. But indeed, Rav Avadya and Yosef, because of these questions, Paskins not to bake a Bori Pri Adama, unless you're actually going to eat some of the vegetables that are cooked in this. Then it becomes part of an extended vegetable, which was one way to look at it. But not the juice per se.
Vegetable soup.
Vegetables.
And charcoal?
No. No. The soup itself is adama, is what Rav Pap is saying. Not separately charcoal. If the vegetable, let's say you have vegetables in a chicken soup. Okay. Then the soup is shahako, because it's not essentially a ha'adama soup.
And when you eat the carrot in the soup?
So then that depends on our shlokos, which we're going to be discussing shortly, right after we finish the daf, about what the halach is about the vegetables that were shlukot. Shalom.
Okay. Is there not going to be a better...
I ruined it for you too. Yeah. You can't hear Kol Nidre anymore. I try my best.
Is it going to be not going to be the vegetables and the super ground or not? Or?
We'll talk about it.
Maybe that's why in the old country the borscht always had chunky pieces.
You should know that ad hayom, there are people who write about this that were not part of the borscht culture, especially if you see the chuvas of Sfarnim. Mm-hmm. The thing that they take for granted is, of course, nobody would have had the water of the borscht. Why would anybody drink that? Maybe it was the minig at the time of the Mishnah Berurah to actually drink the borscht. Can you imagine? that's how far they are from the borscht.
Before they invented sour cream, you know?
Do we learn from this? What is this? He grabbed it and he made a rough. Is that what we learned in this book?
Kofat, you mean?
Yeah, is this what we actually learn? You hold it when you say
no. No, kofats means that he stuck his head in, like we had the loshing that you have by Mamuchan, where he did kofetz v'rosh. So it's the idiot. The idiots always have what to say. They jump in where angels fear to tread.
They get
everything.
By the way, borscht,
where wise men never go.
Borscht isn't beet soup. Borscht was fermented.
No, there's two. That's shava. There were two types. There's fermented and there's the regular beet soup. You probably come from a place like South Africa or something like that.
Borscht.
Lithuanian.
Yeah, no. They're 50 years behind the time in South Africa today, too. So he came 50 years ago, that's 100 years behind the time. Very rough, Papa. How about Maya the Shivta? Maya. What happens if you put anise into the water that you're cooking in. So that's the shiloh. What is the point of anise, actually? Is it that I like the licorice taste? Is that the essential thing? It's the mituke time, it's the taste that I'm interested in? Or do I use it to basically cut through the heavy taste, the sickening taste of the organic materials of meat and of chicken, it lightens it a bit. It cuts through the zuama, you know, the same way that we take off the top layer of it. We skim the soup in order to get rid of the zuama. We put in also anise in order to cut the taste, but that means that it's not for itself a tam of its own that we're interested in. Toshma, we have an interesting raya to this because it says that hashevet, once you used a stalk of anise, you put it into your soup. Now you take it out and you want to chew on it. There's no chiyuv on it anymore to take off truma from it. It's not going to be makabel truma because basically it's washed out at this point. no longer has any taste. But note the language. Mishnatna ta'am bekidera, which is mashma. That's the purpose. We never would have said that. And therefore, must be shmamina lemituke ta'am avdila shmamina. Clearly, we are interested in its taste, in which case you'd have to be mevarech on it, on that taste, according to Rav Papa. This is one of the big problems with the pshat and those that try to say that the only thing Rav Papa was referring to was something where you were eating the vegetables as well, because clearly the anise was not, it didn't have any taste there, so it couldn't be that you're going to be biting on the parsley. I mean, that's not what you sit there to eat on. Right?
Why would you have to use it as tevel? It was tevel before you used it. So why was he allowed to put into the soup?
Maybe he didn't, whatever. I mean, that could be the old, he didn't need the soup.
No, but he used
it. Well, I mean,
you're not used tevel.
No, you're not, but if you're being chased by an alien, what do you do then?
Throw the soup?
What if the alien wants to eat soup? You throw it into the soup. Now the shayla is, he finally takes off. Huh. You are hungry. You are broken. You are shaken. You want to eat a little bit of the leftovers. You're allowed to eat it now. Huh? So now you're allowed to eat it. There you go.
And the soup is
now
it's
over here.
The soup is
in there anyway. Oh. What do you care?
Oh, okay.
There was nothing. He's not high up in
the
world.
But
if there's a suffix, there's a taste, what do you do?
There's no suffix.
When there is a suffix.
When there is a suffix, as we said earlier, when Eliyahu HaNavi comes and he decides there's a suffix, you'll talk to him about it. But hashtamiya, there's no suffix. Okay, I'm sorry. I've been up all night.
If you cook it in the pot, you're like a little good.
Sorry, nothing obvious. So you got a problem. Take another piece and make a broth on it. Om Rabkiya Barashi. Pat tsnuma bika'ara. Now, the truth is we're suddenly going off topic. A little bit. Because what's happened is that we started to talk about the Kedima in Brachot, right? And the Kedima in Brachot, we had only gotten to because we were trying to bring a raya about which bracha, whether it's a Shahakol, whether it's a Adon, but then we got into the Shaila, whether Chaviv is better, Zion is better, right? There's another area in which we also need to discuss Chavivut and Chashivut in terms of bracha, and precisely the same things we've been discussing over here, which is if something is in water or not, but it has nothing to do with which bracha. It has to do with Lecha Mishnah on Shabbos, or being Botseya on Shabbos, or if you're being Botseya from a whole loaf during the week, what comes first? So there too, without even mentioning what we're talking about, we've suddenly switched gears. And what Rav Chiya Barashi is saying is that if you've got some old dried bread, we use the word tsnumo today to mean toast. In those days, it just meant tsnuma, like the pasuk of the parot, you know, the tsnumot dakot. So you're the tsnumot dakot of the
rusks.
I thought rusks were toasted. Aren't they toasted? This is not toasted.
It's dried in the oven.
Dried in the oven. This is stone dried bread. So your dried bread you stick into some soup to eat it or something.
Stale.
Not necessarily stale. Dried out. So tsnumot dakot on the parot are now being applied to the shibolin.
Process
shibolin, yeah. Anyway, so they put them into a kara. And you still say hamotzi on them. Now, what it sounds like he's saying is a chiddush about hamotzi. And that isn't really the chiddush, because as we see, plig the Rav Chiya, d'om Rav Chiya, tzarish t'chale bracha im hapat. Clearly now, Rav Chiya Barashi is arguing on Rav Chiya, because Rav Chiya holds that when you make your bracha, it should be completed at the time that you complete cutting the challah. Whereas over here, if you're going to make it on the pot tsnuma, so then it's not shy to talk about this now, right? Okay. It's because this doesn't have a din of a shlema any longer. So what are we talking about now? We're talking about kedima for which, not bracha even, but which challah you're going to cut. It's a whole different issue then. Maskif lo rav, wait a second. Apparently, your problem over here is you have a piece of bread, and you're saying, I shouldn't make a bracha on the piece of bread, because by the time I finish my bracha, yeah, I have a cut bread. In other words, I only have a piece of bread. But if you're going to cut the challah as you're saying the bracha, you're going to end up with a piece of cut bread at that point too. So who cares? That doesn't make any sense what he's saying. So then halapatnam, even if I take a whole challah, you're telling me I should be cutting it as I'm making the bracha, so then kikagamra, aprusakagamra. Wonder what you're saying, and I should be completing my bracha as I'm completing the cutting. Then I haven't gained anything. Elam arava mibarech v'acharkach botzea. Be careful not to cut the challah beforehand. Finish your bracha, and then cut the challah. Now, of course, we try to, the only reason to cut the challah before would be to have it prepared so that you have less of a hefsek between the bracha. There shouldn't be any hefsek at that. So what we do is we make a little mark, but you have to be careful. The mark doesn't extend so deeply that if you would pick up the bread with the piece that you cut, that it would fall apart, because then it's no longer whole. And especially on Shabbos, we've got it in like a Mishnah. Where there's a separate reason for it to be whole.
But the news today is announced they cut a hole in the Earth's center, almost to the core, actually, today.
No, they didn't. You read it wrong.
Almost. No, they're close, I thought.
No. I guarantee you that's not what you read. Absolutely guaranteed.
The crust. They call it the Mohawk.
Oh, okay. Now you're talking Bediuk. I mean, do you want to be like Rabbi Yom Bar Yefet?
I hope it doesn't pop when they go through.
So now the Nahar Doi used to do it like Reb Chiya. Rabbanan did it like Rava, to wait until you finish the bracha. And Omer Avinu Omer Li, my mommy always told me that Avu Chavik Reb Chiya, your dad used to cut the challah like Reb Chiya, he would say the bracha as he was cutting. The Om Reb Chiya tzarech shtchale bracha im apat, but the Rabbonin were avdei kirava. The Hilchata kirava, and actually that's how we paskin, the Om Reb Varech, the Achakach Botzea, should be careful to make that bracha first and only then to cut through. Yes, you know, there's people that cut, and then they sing a bracha, they cut a little bit, they lose their place. And then they're looking for where they cut, of course, which ends up taking more time than it would have been if they hadn't done the cut. And obviously, the whole thing is a joke. I mean,
you're supposed to cut where you started in this cutting?
Well, you just cut the most efficient way. The truth is that for us, the whole thing is really not very nogea. Because in their times where the bread was baked up against the side, so then, the Gemara's Mechalik, where it is you're supposed to cut from is the area that began baking first. But over here, the way we do it with these gigantic ovens belts. So over there, the whole thing is really not nagea, because anywhere you cut's the same. So it used to be you had to look for the place to cut in order to be Mekayim the Mitzvah correctly. But where you can cut anywhere, I mean, who cares where exactly you're coming from?
So you wouldn't need to cut first?
Saying, look, who's going to argue with the minute? But Lamaisa, the discussion was based on other times and other technologies.
And the advantage of cutting there that
then. Of what? That's the story of Menashe.
Yeah, so what is the point of cutting where it's baked most? Because.
But we discussing the Mar Sanhedrin now, or are we discussing.
Is it because
we're not talking about
the
beer? Because there is no makom that it's baked first. That's the point. Our ovens are all
the principle in the first place. Why should it even matter?
Because we are not learning that principle. That's why I asked: are we doing the sugya in Sanhedrin? Are we doing the sugya in Brachos?
Sanhedrin always. But the question is: right, in a home baked oven, isn't there something that's closer to the element?
No, the whole idea of a good oven is that it spreads the heat
evenly.
There's no element in an oven. The element is covered. You're thinking about broiling. In normal ovens, there's no exposed element. That's why we have turbo ovens, to make sure that the heat is even better distributed. That's the idea, is to have a distribution. Right. Itmar, hevi'u lifnehem pitzitin ushlemi. How about you've got now pieces that are broken and pieces that are sholem. Now, what's the din? Omer huna mevorach ala pitzitin. Now, mevorach ala pitzitin means he can be mevorach ala pitzitin if he wants. Rashi adds, but if the pitzitin would be larger than the shleimim, then you would have to be mevorach ala pitzitin, mm-hmm. because it would mean that according to Rav Huna, shleim has no particular value. So if it has no particular value, then the chashivut would be measured by the size. Tosfos disagrees, and he says, does not believe that we could have a machloket min hakatzeh lakatzeh, whether shleimut is chashuv or size is chashuv. He believes there's only a simple machloket as to whether there is significance to shleimut. It's never that we call something chashuv. In other words, you could do whatever you want. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, it's always a shleima that's a mitzvah min hamufchar. However, we need to qualify that because there's other factors. How about if the bread is made out of different species? So you have a prusa, let's say, of chitim, and a shleima of saorim. Now over there, since the Torah was marked in chitim to saorim, so divrei Yaakov mevarech ala prusa shel chitim, because that's more important than the difference between a shleima and a non-shleima, even according to Rabbi Yochanan. And this opens up really our minds to other issues that might be nogea over here, such as questions of the cleanliness of the flour, noki or kiver. In other words, a dark bread or a white bread. In Gemara terms, and until people became very romantic, white bread was always the better bread. And of course you paid much more for a white bread than for a dark, improperly processed grain bread.
Used to be.
I mean, I understand. It used to be also that if something was grown to be nice and beautiful and well-fertilized, it was viewed as tastier and better. Now if it's all beaten up and it looks like a dog wouldn't eat it, but it's organic, then it's already, I mean, it's so organic that you see the stuff they use to fertilize it. It looks the same. So, but in any event, in those days, the clean bread was the good bread. Or you might have a question of tahor bread versus tamei bread. If you're makanu tumah v'tahara, all of these are indeed issues in terms of the chashivas of a bracha. Tosfos deals with some of it over here. So we have a machloket here as to the value of shleimut. Omer Rav Yirmiyah Bar Abba, well, I think this is really an old machlokas, a machlokas tanoim. Because when it comes to truma, we have the same thing. There we have tormim batzal katan shalem, avolol chatzi batzal gadol. That you would give a large, again, this is a part of the machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. One way, you take a smaller but whole onion, and not a larger, but cut onion to give to a kohen. That's, again, Rashi understands that the question over here is it large or is it whole? That's the issue. Tosfos says, no, clearly that's not the issue, as I've already explained. It can't be. There's a machlokes min hakatz about large and shalem. Unreasonable. What we must be referring to over here is a better onion. So we have a chatzi batzal that has value, whatever it is. Not that it's bigger, it's better on some level. So it has an innate chashivut. What should I give? So one man, the Amar says, the Tanakhama says, give the whole, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, give the half. So give from the chatzi batzal gadol. So my labo kamifuket. L'chora, what they're arguing in, is whether the chashiv is adif. Again, according to the chashiv, for whatever reason it's chashiv. Or according to Rashi, chashiv because it's gadol. Umar Saver Shalem Adif. Says the Gemara, no. By Truma, you have a whole different issue. Because by Truma, the question is, you need to give it to the Kohen. Suppose there's no Kohen around. So if there's a Kohen there, Hech the Ika Kohen, Kuli Amalo Pligi de Chashuv Adif. In terms of the giving value to the Kohen, we're not talking about some kind of theoretical value. We're talking about a value. What's he going to enjoy more? He's about to eat it. You know, you can tell them, I want to give you the chashuv. Thank you very much. Could I have something good, please? I mean, so obviously they're not going to say, could be everybody agrees chashuv is adam. Keep leaking the lekka coin. We're talking about there's no coin. So now we get into another question, which is, how long can we expect the batzal to last in order to get to the coin? Obviously, if it's shelf life, exactly. Obviously, if it's a whole onion, it's going to last longer. And there it says, Titznan, komakom sheyesh kohen toremin hayafeh, but komakom sheein kohen toremin hamitkayim. So the Tanakam is saying, look, the mitkayim is obviously the whole onion. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, we always give the trumim and hayafeh and hope that the kohen comes along in time to eat it. Because, I mean, what's more important to us is the hana of the kohen, and not to make plans for what if he's late and who knows when. That's not your business. Your business is to give the yafa. Yeah, okay. Again, technology has caught up with all of these issues. I mean, I understand that they're planning now communities with pneumatic tubes that take the true man and the mice directly to the guy.
Omra Nachu
by Yitzchak. V'yorei shamayim yotzei yedei shneihem. You know what? My focus over here. What to use? It just brings us straight to Pesach again. It's amazing. So do you say a bracha on the prusa, or do you say a bracha on the shleima? Oh, your shamayim can do both. How can you do both? Umanu, that's marbereit ravina. The marbereit ravina meniach prusa betoch hashleima ubotzeya. So you take the broken piece, you put it together with the whole piece, carry both in your hands, and then you can be botzea, gears of machlokas, whether you can be botzea even from the prusa, or you have to be botzea from the shleima, and it's just nirak that it's from the prusa. And indeed, tani tana kamei rav nachman, here's the way, niach prusa betocha shleima botzea umevorech. There was a tana, at that point was nameless, that said in front of rav nachman Yitzchak, the way to do it is to take the prusa, put it into the shleima, and then you say your bracha. On my leg.
That even a shleima is a sori?
Huh? No. Talking about the question that we had before. According to Rashi, larger prusa, a smaller shleima, or according to Tosfistam, no chashivas in the shleima, but I have a reason that I want the prusa. On my leg, so Rav Nachman told him, tell me, what's your name? On my leg, my name is Salman. On my leg, you should have locks. No, that's not what he said. On my leg, shalomata. V'shleima mishnatcha, shesanta shalom benatamidim. Look at this. That was brilliant. We've talked about machlokas all the time. The shleima, the prusa, you've got it all. That was a great, great idea.
Do we hear from him again?
Salman. But I mean, listen, everybody names their kid Salman because of him. Omra Papa, hakol modim b'pesach. When it comes to the Seder, so over there you've got a real problem. Because you've got a prusa, which is the one that's kashuv to be the lechem oni tonight. On the other hand, you have a dinner lechem mishnah, and for the lechem mishnah, you're supposed to be using a shleima. And then you have the question of the chashivas of the betziah. What do you do? So on Pesach, everybody is made it, for sure. Meniach prusa, betoch hashleima, or botzeah. You can't leave the prusa behind. My time a lechem oni ksiv. The derech of adoni is beprusa. So you're going to have to take the prusa. So what do you do about the fact that you're not being botzeya on the correct path? Oh, well, what you do is make the bracha. Again, I'm saying what we do. There were many different approaches. Tosis brings actual practical differences, how to look at it. But that the way basically we do it, and is mentioned here in the Tosis, is we view the bracha of the matzah as being made on the prusa. The bracha on the lechem is like every bracha on lechem. Over there I say it as lechem mishnah. So over there I have lechem mishnah. Then I can drop the other shleima. And then I make on the prusa the bracha of matzah on both of them. And then I botzeah for both of them. And hand it out. And that way it's as if I was botzeah on the prusa, whereas actually I was botzeah from both. Omer Rabba u'b'shabbat chayav adam lefzoh al shtei kikarot. This is all on a regular day. If you're talking about a Shabbos, you need lechem mishnah. My time of lechem mishnah k'tiv. It says in the Torah lechem mishnah about the man. Om Rav Ashi chazin elei l'Rav Kahana, the nekit tarte, ubotza chaga. I saw Rav Kahana hold the two challahs when he made the bracha to be Mekayim Lecha Mishnah, but he didn't cut both challahs. He cut one challah, and then if he needed later, he would cut more. But actually, Rabbi Zeira, Habibotza Kula Shiruta, Rabbi Zeira cut initially, when he made the bracha, he cut the entire thing, so there would be enough bread there for the whole meal. Omalei Ravina L'Ravashi, Ravina said to Ravashi, I mean, it looks like you're a slob when you do that. No, I mean, you're so hungry. Especially in those days, they didn't cut slices, they cut pieces. So it means you give somebody a gigantic piece. It's going to last for the whole meal. I mean, well, you're calling him a slob. You're acting like a slob. So he said, I'm not like him to call you a lokavidaki. Look, in general, I don't act this way. So nobody thinks I'm a slob. It's obvious that I'm only doing this for the covet of the Surah of Shabbos, that there should be a sense of much and plenty and not being mitzamtzim at all. And therefore, if I'm doing it now, who's going to think that it's because I'm a slob? Rabami Barabasi had another cup in which Ki Misramile Rifta Daruva, when they had an opportunity to make a bracha on the bread that had been used for making the Eruv, so it was now after Shabbos, they could eat the Eruv. So Mevorchanai Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz, they would bedavka use the Eruv bread to say Hamotzian, because they said, you know, this is already was miyuchad as mitzvah bread, and mitzvah bread also has a chashivut. So let's use the mitzvah bread.
Sorry.
Whatever you use on an eruv that you don't know that you no longer need for eruv tafshilin is a good whatever it is eruv tafshilin whatever you use.
You can eat that. I thought, and then it still works.
Yeah, I mean, once it's there at the time of the Chalos of Shabbos.
But it won't end for the next Shabbos?
No, we'll have to make another one.
So that's it?
Yeah, now they... now it's so stale. All right, gentlemen. It's been a lot of fun. And now it's time for our review.
What's the Shabbos?
Oh, yes.